Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Hi there, and welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and we're glad you have been able to tune us in today, and I don't think Dan is going to make it today. Maybe he'll join us late, but anyway, just wanted to mention that just because you've tuned in today and you'll hear about certain tax strategies and perhaps some investment opportunities, I hope we can get to discussion of at least one private placement memorandum. But in any event, just because you like what you hear and you think, well, gee, that sure sounds like something I ought to be doing, which may in fact be the case, but it may not. So we suggest and strongly encourage you to consult with your existing professional advisors, tax, accounting, legal, real estate mentors, etc., to make sure that what you heard is correct, and moreover, and most importantly, that it might apply to your facts and circumstances in a positive fashion. So anyway, for those that may not have such advisors, you're more than welcome to connect with us. The fastest way is to go to our website at baplanner.com. That's baplanner.com. And if you will complete just even the first step, the intake form, client intake form, client profile, that will give us enough information to where we can talk specifics about your facts and circumstances so we can figure out if we can sync up with your objectives and help you get on down the road with respect to these real estate private partnership syndications or assorted tax strategies to help save you some taxes and in turn provide perhaps some capital that you can use to invest in the real estate private partnership syndications. Why do we like real estate private partnership syndications? I guess we're done with the disclaimer, so we're pivoting now to the rest of the show. Why do we discuss real estate partnership syndications, private partnership syndications, on a weekly basis? And in fact, we discuss specific offerings at times to give you, without mentioning the name perhaps, in most cases, without, just to try to give you a feel for what's out there and how we analyze what we're looking for to determine whether or not it might be an investment that fits a particular set of facts and circumstances. But generally, the reason we like these partnerships is because I'm typically working with passive investors. We do have some active lead partner or sponsor type clients, but for the most part, we're working with those that are putting the money up. They may be investing, anywhere from 25 to $1 million in a given partnership that's undertaking anywhere from a $15 million to $115 million or higher acquisition of a apartment building or a portfolio of several apartment buildings. And, we're participating in what's called the crowdfunding model, where we join together. Maybe, it could be as few as three or four other partners, or could be as many as three or four hundred other partners. I know that I personally invested in a 10-property portfolio, and I think we had several hundred investors go into that partnership. And so that's one of the beauties of this model. You don't have to be Donald Trump to buy these or to invest in these type of investments. You do need to have sophisticated status under the SEC Rule 5 rules. That's not necessarily accredited. Non-accredited can be sophisticated. One way is that you join or participate in an organization that provides training. There are several mentor platforms, investor platforms, more than several around the country. There are several just right there in Houston. And then the other consideration is your net worth. If you've got more than $1 million net worth, not counting the equity in your home, then you are accredited. Or if you earn, there's a couple definitions for single versus joint. But let's just say if you earn $200,000 to $300,000 a year, you may qualify just based on the past 3 years' earnings. So, but again, if you're not accredited, which a good many of our clients are not, if you engage with our firm as a professional that understands these transactions, we invest in them ourselves, we consult with a lot of clients that are investing, then you will qualify regardless of anything else to participate in a certain type of transaction. We refer to it as a 506B, as in boy, transaction, and there are those transactions. There is the ability for up to 35 non-accredited investors to be involved. There's a couple of other exceptions, but let's just generally say it's up to 35. And then an unlimited number of accredited investors can participate versus the 506C offering. So typically the transactions we're consulting on are going to be under one of those two statutes, or they may be under no statute if it's a group of, say, three or four folks that are joining together. They're all going to actively participate in that transaction. In terms of running the property, et cetera, then that type of transaction would not need to have a formal Rule 5 designation. In fact, it would not be subject to needing to alert the SEC to that transaction even. In any event, typically on the air, we're going to be talking about both the 506B and C. We're just now starting to work some small apartment transaction discussion into the mix, and so that would be the type that would not fall under either one of those two statutes. Before we go much further and we start talking about, I think we'll discuss a few tax strategies here since we are kind of entering that, maybe not the final stretch, but we're making the turn, I guess you might say, with regard to the number of months left in the tax year. And now's the time, at least by now, if you should have already done this sooner, but we're getting close to the time when it's crunch time. If you want to take control of your tax bill for next April, in helping determine what that might be. And you can do certain things, or most people can. Some people can't. You have to have some attributes, some tax attributes that allow us to structure or tweak timing, tweak amounts, etc., to where we can save you money. We can either defer tax, or we can generate more deductibility or more deductions in the way you spend your money, particularly if you have a trader business. And I'll just tell you, I've seen very few small business owners that are not paying too much tax. It's amazing the dollars that are left on the table annually. And most small business owners don't have time. They don't have the foresight to understand that certain strategies will put more money in their pocket. And if they just get a taste of that, they'll never go back. And some of our best clients are the ones that were letting huge amounts of money slip off the table. And once we showed them how to capture that, boy, it got their attention. And now they're every year they're coming to us, typically right after the beginning of the year, to start planning, okay, how are we going to approach the business plan execution this year to not just grow the business, but how do we grow it and keep more of the dollars in our pocket instead of sending them on to the government. In any event, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our first break, and then we'll come back here momentarily with more of the Be a Planner show, and we'll discuss some things that came across my radar in the news this week. We'll be right back.
Always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the guy. Get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A, acquisition, to E, exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Song Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like me with big dreams and fake dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, and we've come to the time in the show when we discuss the current news. So if you want to see the articles that I'm going to just briefly go through, some of them here, you can go to our companion website, which is BeAPlannerShow.com, and you will go to the resources tab, and you'll see we have right there at the top recent news. And under that, we've got, I don't know, this week I think I've got about 8 articles out there, and there's a few of them that are, or at least one of them that's Houston related. I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I just wanted to clarify something. I think I said that the Greenway Plaza set of office buildings had been foreclosed on, and that's not exactly correct. I mistook a loan default as a foreclosure, but there's an article. Let's see. Well, this was in July. I didn't realize the date on this article when I pulled it, so it may be foreclosed on. But July 12th in, let's see, this is the site BizNow. They said that it was in default, and according to someone in the know there, it was nowhere close to being resolved. I'm pretty sure I saw later in the Houston Business Journal. I'll have to track that down before maybe Friday's show and I'll update. But I'm pretty sure it did move to foreclosure. But maybe not, because I tell you, the lenders are going out of their way to avoid foreclosing, which I don't recall that being the case in the past. It doesn't seem like, at least back in the 80s, it wasn't the case, the mid-80s. Now, 2008, 9, and 10, there probably was a lot more workout opportunity than the 80s. But I tell you what, this time around, there's a lot of dancing, I guess you might say, the lender and borrower are dancing to try to figure out a way to make it work, and it's only if there's just no way forward, it appears the lender is going ahead and foreclosing, because they know there will be buyers at a lower price. And speaking of, let's see, I think I put this article out here. Yeah, look at the second article from the end of this week's articles. It's Menashe, I'm not sure how you say that. It's a building out in Seattle, I believe. It's a real estate firm. They bought a bank building for $13.6 million, 183,000 and some odd feet. That works out to $74 a square foot. That's not free, but it's almost free when you get into commercial real estate and office buildings. I would hazard a guess that that building probably was worth closer to $175 million, maybe $150 to $175 not long ago. There's a picture of it there. It doesn't look like it's historical in nature. Let me see if it says, well, I guess I'm probably being a little bit aggressive on my presumed valuation. It says it was sold in 2014. So what's that, almost 10 years ago, for $45 million. So I think I got an extra zero in there, or an extra decimal point. But bottom line is, that's still, you know, just in 10 years, that's a, a 70% decline in value, somewhere there. And it could have been more. I know the transaction we talked about, 150 California Street in San Francisco, this has been 2 or 3 months ago, we were discussing it, and it had come down from $300 or $400 million down to I think it was $70 or $80 million that it was transacting currently for. So, and that was just in like a 3 or 4 year stretch. Of course, Seattle is not San Francisco yet, or Portland, I'm sorry. This is a Portland, Oregon transaction. Could have been Seattle. They've got similar issues, but in any event, the office space, as we keep reading and see, is in trouble. I mean, there's just no other way to describe it. It's in big time trouble. And it's interesting, there are some office to multifamily conversions taking place, and that's what, you know, is looked at as one of the salvations, I guess, that could happen, although the cost of converting an office property to multifamily is extreme. Converting, say, a hotel to multifamily is more doable, but it's still a bit more expensive than apparently building anew, but it also typically has some nice locations, you know, if they're in a downtown other than one that's basically withered on the vine. You know, being downtown San Francisco, for instance, is not necessarily a plus, but anyway. Let's see. I think another article of note is the third one. The soft landing may be rougher than many expect. And there's been a lot of talk lately with the recent, apparently the recent quasi-success of the last rate increase or two, that the brakes have been put on inflation, and everybody, or a lot of the economists, are acting like, well, you know, we may avoid a recession. It's going to be a soft landing. And I think this week and last couple of weeks are maybe having some economists reconsider that. And says this article has been a lot of happy talk about a so-called soft landing for the economy, a glide path back down to the officially desired 2% inflation without a recession. However, there's other economists that have noted that the not only with the federal fund rate likely going to continue up one or more additional clicks, there's the awareness that a lot of the stimulus money is finally running very low. It's almost, you know, consumers have spent most of it, and they're saying that that's going to impact spending perhaps more than originally anticipated, and that could very well be enough to push us into recession, according to some economists. So anyway, I know even the folks like Larry Summers, former head of the Treasury Department, and during Obama timeline, Harvard professor, I believe, he's even saying that, and he thought we were going to slide by, but he's now saying that it's likely that we're going to experience a recession. I'd say this, with what's going on with the big three automakers right now, I would say that very much looks like it's going to be giving us a recession. And I'll tell you, it's interesting how all of the quote economists in Congress, and I'm going to add a Garth and Wayne's expression after that, not those folks don't realize, including Mr. Biden, that the climate change agenda, the EV movement, etc., is going to do away with hundreds of thousands of jobs in the auto industry. You don't need as many laborers to build a EV as you do a petro vehicle. And they're just now understanding that, and they're also understanding that the costs aren't going to come down any less really than the petro model. In fact, they may never get down to what the gas versions of these vehicles go for. And you know, I mean, it's almost poetic justice at times how the exuberance on the left over spending more money and undertaking technologies mandating, like I think there's a 2030 mandate to have, it's like I don't know, 60 or 80% of all vehicles in the market be electric, you know, that's not that far away. And there's a lot of people that don't want to buy an electric vehicle. And, you know, if you and I live in a city where, you know, now I'm realizing you've got a charging station, almost every hotel in Houston probably has one, and many self-serve gasoline stations have them. I was through a Buc-ee's there at Katy, oh, 7 or 8, 9 months ago when I was in America, and beautiful EV chargers right out in the parking lot. I believe they were Teslas. And, you know, we've got them over here in Southeast Asia. It's striking how many EV stations there are here, and I would think it'd be the reverse. I think I'd see more over there. But, you know, we've got more electronic vehicle brands and dealerships here, most of which I had never heard of. And, you know, yet I don't know anybody. I don't have any friends that have one. I know I see them on the road, so I guess I just don't run with the right crowd. But I tell you what, I'm not all that excited about getting one. I've got a 9-hour drive to get up country to visit our in-laws, which we do a bit, good bit. And, you know, I don't, that'll add probably a couple hours of charging time if and when it ever gets to the SUV range that, you know, we would be a prospect for. And, you know, I just, I don't know. I mean, there's something comforting about being able to whip in, fill up 10 minutes and whip out. And of course here, the beauty of this model of filling up is that there are no self-serve gasoline stations. I'm not joking. As Biden would say, no joke. You know, and it just, I can't tell you how good that feels not to have to jump out and pump your own gas. But anyway, it's got an offset, and the offset is the labor rate here is you know, $15 a day, not $15 an hour for the folks that work in those stations. And of course, everything's relative. You know, an apartment rent is less than $75 here for just basic accommodations. So it's all in line. Let's see here. We still got a few minutes for the next break. Let's pick another article. Let's see. Yeah, multifamily. Strong. A couple articles here on multifamily. Strong multifamily, or strong demand for multifamily assets will continue through 2024. I think there were a lot of premature admonitions about the multifamily sector, and it's not that there hasn't been some headwinds. I mean, it's very much more difficult to borrow money than it was. You've also got some foreclosures that have rankled the at least the local scene. I know Houston's had more than a few. And, well, each market around the country has had their share. And you really have to look at those on a case-by-case basis, because generally it's not lower occupancies that have caused that, if at all. Or if it is lower occupancies, it's more of an operational issue where there was not adequate due diligence done at the outset. And, you know, I think there's been a lot of transactions that it was more an issue of the seller that was needing to exit the scene because they had debt that was going to reset or need to be refinanced. And I think early on into this current cycle, a lot of buyers thought that they were getting, you know, an off-market asset that had more value than what it had. And, had more due diligence been done on what type of tenants were in those units, among other things, I think perhaps that might have helped avoid some of these situations. You've also got, you know, the supply chain issues that caused more than a few operators to get behind on executing their business plan. And let me tell you something, the holding cost on a multifamily piece of real estate of any size, you take a 300, 400, 500 unit type property, the holding costs are just stifling if you get behind in terms of getting that asset renovated, or renovated, getting the rents up to market at that point, and getting the property filled up. And I'm just telling you, I've said it once, I'm going to say it again. There's not a piece of real estate in the world that doesn't look better with a rent-paying tenant in it. And I think that's been issues. If you look at the occupancy rates, or vacancy rates, as the case may be, on the big operators that had foreclosures, you're going to see that they went from 90-plus percent down to 60s, in the 60s. And that's, as one might say, that's no way to run a multifamily property. Let's see here. There was a comment. It was, yeah, it was this article. It says they were talking about supply and demand, and with the demand expected to accelerate in the first half of 2024. And the comment was, so far, supply set to reach a 50-year high this year is keeping pace. And so that should keep prices in check, although they've still got, part of the supply is the new units that are coming on board. In Houston, for example, we've got, I think it's 21,000 that should be on the ground, open, available for occupancy over the next 6 months, 6 to 12 months. San Antonio's in the 18,000 level. I've forgotten Phoenix, but it's up there. Phoenix has got a lot of building going on, but in any event, according to this article, in the four quarters ended as of June 30th this year, the median market saw, now again, median is another word for average, and none of us are average, we're all actual, so let me get that point in again. But in any event, the median market saw inventory growth of 2%. 10 out of the 150 markets experienced growth above 5%. But in any event, the coming months, there's not a negative trend. It's still positive. And I think as long as we have that, we should have prices that are somewhat stable, which is good for investors. We like stability. We like the ability to take a beat up old Class C building and renovate it, and, you know, get the current amenity set in place and then raise the market rates. But that's the strategy after we've paid the price to acquire them. And so in any event, what we don't want to see is for the supply to dip with still having the demand that's currently being experienced, and it looks like it could go up even in the top metros. But I think it's time to take another break. Let's go ahead and do that now, and then when we come back, we'll talk about a project over in San Antonio that's looking for investors. We'll be right back in a few minutes with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Grindstones and rhinestones are made of my life, but I'll shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I'm gonna be rich no matter how much it costs. I'm gonna win no matter how much I lost. And I hope that you'll tell me, well done, my child. You've won your reward through your sacrifice. Your sacrifice.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of the Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And let me see if I can get the deal up here. Here it is. This transaction is a 506C offering, so that means we can talk about more of the details. I still typically don't divulge the name. I will tell you this is in San Antonio, and I'll give you a lot more of the financial details involved and assorted other details here on this one. Let me see here. Let's see how big this unit is. Okay, it's a 174 unit garden style, which that kind of dates it right there. And I'm looking, I'll tell you momentarily how old it is, but it's got an average unit size of 727 square foot. That's typical of older properties, a little bit bigger. Got a noteworthy collection of amenities, according to the memorandum here. They all do. Three swimming pools, tennis court, and ample covered parking. Strategic location just off Southeast Military Drive. I'm very familiar with that part of town. Lots of retail, commercial destinations. There's Sam's and Walmart's, and no Costco's down there. I would suspect that'll be where the next one is, though, if there happens to be another one coming. Those are both out north. And let's see here. Let me go back to the business plan. It's not that long of a hold. They're saying 2 to 3 years. 3 years, I think, is what they're anticipating. And let's see. The they talk a little bit about the debt structure here. The current, it's a Fannie Mae note. They're going to utilize a Fannie Mae 7-year note, fixed rate at 153 basis points over the 7-year treasury, and they've got 7 years of interest-only payments. So, you know, by not focusing on a large-scale value add, this syndicator appreciates the fact and wants you to know that what a good thing it is to use fixed rate financing and therefore remove the interest rate risk over the course of the hold period. I would absolutely agree with that statement, but I'm not buying everything hook, line, and sinker, because usually they've priced that into the deal, and usually they've got fees, and we'll look here in a minute and see what those fees are. But it is impressive, at least on the surface, that they're getting a 174 units at a, I believe it's $67,000 a door cost basis, if I remember correctly. That's what caught my attention when I first saw this. 7% going in cap rate. You know, when you're a buyer, that high cap rate is a good thing, right? It's when you're selling, you want the low one. So the seller's taking it in the shorts on a 7% cap rate, and we keep warning about that when we're looking at pro formas on deals that our clients are in, considering to undertake an investment in. What's the cap rate today, and what is the pro forma showing the cap rate's going to be at exit, you know, 5 to 7 years hence? And there's a lot of transactions out there that'll show a cap rate today of maybe 5.5% here at acquisition, and they're saying, well, it's going to be 5% in 4 or 5 years. And I'm just, again, I've said it many times before, that's pretty aggressive. And I would suggest to you that depending on what happens in the world and in the economy that affects interest rates, and I understand the interest rate is not the cap rate, before I get a bunch of emails or texts reminding me of that, but you know what? There's a tangential relationship. And I'll just tell you, you're not going to see 3% interest rates again and 3% cap rates in quite a while. I mean, you may see 3% cap rates because that's in part a reflection on the quality of the asset. But normally speaking, you know, if somebody's got to go borrow money to buy your property, they're going to be taking out new debt, and they're going to want to make sure they've got the ability to have a net operating income that gives them ample ability to pay that that loan. So it's interesting. This is priced at a 7 cap right at the outset. That's, you know, we're seeing more of these type transactions. And all I can say is I'm glad I'm not the seller involved, because if you were the seller, and let's say you were in the partnership that bought this one 5 years ago, and you know, you had a pro forma that showed a 4% cap rate at exit, well, you're not getting enough money to get any money out of that deal at the end, and you may not be getting enough money to even pay the debt back. Depends on what's happened in the interim. So these cap rates on exit are a serious issue, and we don't take it lightly, and we'll continue to look at that. Let's see here. Let's go back to the financials. I wanted to see if I can get a feel for the fees. Oh, but before I do that, so the equity involved here is 4.8 million dollars that's being raised, and then the that includes $500,000 from the general partner, and then the senior loan on the debt's almost $9 million. So it's not a big transaction. Again, $13,749,000 total. Let me just confirm we've got that price per unit correct. If I divide that by 174, Well, I'm getting a little bit different number, but it's not. Let me do that again. Yeah, I'm getting about 79. I guess the 67 may be the acquisition, and then there's some money, maybe $10,000 a door in CapEx or renovations being applied. But in any event, let's see here. If we go to the details on financials, let's see. Yeah, someone just texted me that it had a 7% cap rate. Yeah, we just went over that a few minutes ago. Let's see. I was hoping to see more about the, oh, here we go. Sources and uses are here. It's an even better tab. Fees. Okay, an acquisition fee. 1%. Of the purchase price. Okay, that's rational. A mortgage brokerage fee, 1% of the loan proceeds. Okay, that could likely be paid to one of their affiliates. So you'd want to, if fees bother you, and maybe it doesn't, fees at this level don't quite get my blood pressure up like the typical fees that are usually multiple digits here. Well, but there's a financing fee of 1%. So, you know, the fact that they drop the acquisition fee is going to be offset by these other fees. And so, you know, all I would say is this is kind of middle of the road. This isn't great. It's not horrible. It's kind of middle of the road. And they've got a construction management fee of 5%. So that's not horrible. Those usually range 5 to 10%. So that's at the lower level, and they've got a technology fee, a technology quarterly license fee. It's $500 a year, and that gets paid to Realty Mogul. This is a Realty Mogul transaction. So in any event, let's see, what are we doing on distributions? How is that going to work? They're going to make distributions. First of all, going to go to the equity partners. The equity investors receive a preferred return of 10% IRR, split 70-30. That's 70% to the limited or passives, 30% to the general partners. So it looks like they are sharing. They're both dining at the trough together, is what that would seem to appear. Which, you know, would we like to see the passives get their money back first? Yeah, we sure would. So that would be one negative. But at least we're sharing it. Of course, we're not sharing any of those fees, and that's my biggest rub. Is why is the team getting some money out before the passive investors are? Because as far as I see it, I know they think they did a lot of work to find this deal, structure this deal, etc. Well, guess what? That's what you're getting, 30% handed to you. Remember, that 30% equity interest is not for the money that they put in. It's being handed. It's the promote. It's the override that they get for structuring the transaction. So on a $8.5 million capital raise, that's almost $3 million effectively being handed to them. So I would say that should cover the structuring, the acquisition, finding, et cetera. And understand, any out-of-pocket they spend in that process, they're getting back on day zero. They're getting reimbursed at closing. And so I just feel like it's a little bit egregious to throw another several percent on top that's not for any out-of-pocket. So in any event, and by the way, those distributions, I believe it starts July of 2024. So, you know, that's not terribly far down the road, another 9 months. Let's see here. Let me see. I'm looking at the sources and uses of funds to see if there's any other fees that pop up. They do identify the CapEx. So the CapEx was $1.347 million. So 1347 divided by 174. Okay, well, that makes up the biggest chunk of that difference I was trying to explain earlier when I was dividing the total all in. In any event, you know, when you look at the current offering of transactions, this is in one of the top metros. San Antonio is booming at the moment. It's on most lists of new incoming arrival, who's leading the pack type articles that I've seen. I've seen it as high as number one in the nation. I've seen it no worse than number four or five. So, you know, it's a good location. It's got a lot going for it. And having my own real estate there in San Antonio, I'm pretty familiar with that market. And I'll just tell you, the price of real estate in San Antonio has never been higher in the history of the world. That's my general assessment right now. And so for you to be able to pick up 174 units, it's not a bad-looking property if you look at – I mean, it's old, but it somebody's been maintaining it. And this is not a heavy value add at all. And this would appear to me to be a pretty rational purchase price. And so in any event, that would be my overall assessment. Let me think here. Was there anything else that I wanted to mention? Let's look at, I know what I wanted to check when I was talking about the price of real estate. They had a section on comps, and this property was built in 1965, and if you look at the comps, there's other properties built in 1960. Here's 1984 at 123,000 a unit. Here's one in 72 at 142,000 a unit. Here's one at 69 at 127 a unit, another one 69, 141. So this isn't bad. This is, seems like a decent transaction. Well, I hear the music. We're at the end again. It's hard to believe how fast that hour goes. We hope you'll join us on Friday at 11 a.m. We should be live once again. And, thank you for tuning in today.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.